Hello and welcome back to the penultimate episode in the first series of the National Outdoor Pod Show. Now, as you will know by now, Yonder are our main sponsors, but today the running episode is being specifically sponsored by Healthy Step. They'll be featuring later in this episode, but if you want to check them out now and how they can help you and your running, then visit the description below. You can also check out down below the competition to win the Ultimate Swimmers Bundle. If you haven't signed up already, then make sure you do that now. Coming up in this running themed episode, Sean Conway tells us why you'd want to do 105 Ironmans in a row. Things get a bit wet as Mike offers up my phone to be dumped in a load of water. We are talking all things running tech with the team over at Zaleo. Find out why you and a bunch of mates might want to run to Paris. And finally, we finish with a bunch of advice with Andy from Healthy Step, who will help you if you're struggling with your feet. Now let's hand over to the host of this episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 5 of the National Outdoor Pod Show. Thanks for sticking with us for this one, and a big thank you to our sponsors, Yonder, who've contributed the Ultimate Swim Bundle. So if you want to win that prize, check out the show notes, and it will show you how. Now, this episode is something that Elise and I are very passionate about. It's all about running. So, Tanuki, I think I'm going to hand over to you. Because you hate running, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't hate running.
I don't hate running. I just don't do it much. I did a lot of, 5K a day. Off the sofa to 5K
couch
or something? Couch to 5K.
Couch
to 5K during COVID times. But my knees, they didn't do it for me.
What was it that hit you? Is it just like... Just the repetition
just
of it?
Maybe
perhaps?
It was the repetition, yeah. I ended up actually doing my 5Ks on roller skates instead because that was a lot.
Because that's easier.
for me it was. But obviously it's like less impact.
So I think we're going to use this to go into your roller skating because actually, I know this is a running episode, but you have 3 world records.
I do.
And you used to be in a West End musical.
I did, yeah.
Talk us through those, please.
So my Guinness World Records are the most cartwheels, the most spins on e-skates, and then the most burpees on roller skates, all in a minute.
Cartwheels on roller skates?
Yeah.
How many did you do?
I did 33.
I did not know that was possible.
What?
I think it was 33.
And
yeah.
And of the other ones, how many spins?
The spins was 70-something. That was insane.
Were you sick afterwards?
I basically nearly did throw up, and I will never do it again either. It was a one-shot, one-hit wonder for me. I'll never do that again. That was awful. And it was electric roller skates as well. They're like 2 like mini little segways.
So they just power? They've got like motors on.
Yeah, they've got motors in them. It's like 2 separate segways that you put on your feet. And for the spinning one, so I went fast. Like it wasn't
that
a normal.
Sounds
it was.
Rubbish.
It was like. Like
also,
that,
you
wild.
Love electricity. In the water episode, you were talking about electric surfing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm adrenaline.
Love a little electrical boost.
We can maybe get sponsored by like a power company or something.
Yeah. Adrenaline
and what was the
here.
Third record?
That was burpees. And that was, that
on
was...
On roller skates,
no. Yeah. That was a brutal one.
How many did you do?
I think it was 30 as well.
In a minute?
Around 30, in a minute, yeah.
I struggle to do 30 burpees normally.
I honestly
normally,
couldn't breathe afterwards. And I was just like...
I think I could do like 10 normal burpees in a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane. Well, that's like raised the bar pretty high. So now we're going to talk about running, which is what we're about. So
much less impressive.
Elise, you obviously ran around the coast of the UK. So talk us through the mindset that you have to have for something like that.
I think, like, I truly, like, ignorance was bliss. I'd done this one fairly disastrous marathon dressed as a purple Crayola crayon prior to that, where I literally, it was the Milton Keynes Marathon 2014, so we're coming up to the 10-year anniversary, and I cried for 8 miles, and a small child called me the crying crayon.
Oh.
And that was the extent of my long-distance running career before I set off to run around the coast, which I did about 18 months after that. And I think I just didn't really know what I'd bitten off. Like, I just didn't really... Because I hadn't got the... Like, I have now done quite a few, like, single and multi-day ultras. And I think if I'd done more of that, I would have thought, well, this is way too hard. How on earth could I do it for 10 months? Mm. So I think there was a bit of just not knowing was actually really helpful. And I think I just really, like... I know it sounds a bit cheesy, but this stuff's, like, meant to be fun. And I wanted to enjoy it. So I tried really hard to focus on... just having a nice time. And I think that's important for running in general. Like, although it's hard at times, and you sometimes have to go out in the dark and the cold when you don't want to, for most of us, it's just a hobby. Like, it should be fun and it should be good.
And I think a lot of the focus in this episode will be on sort of trail running and ultra running, which sometimes people are quite afraid of, but actually seems to be less about time and more about that enjoyment and sucking in nature and seeing the trails. And would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I genuinely think that running a 50K where I'm stopping to walk up the hills, I'm eating a sandwich, I'm taking a photo, I give me that. That's easier any day than a hard park run. That's like 20 minutes of pure pain. So I think the longer stuff can seem really daunting, but I think there's a massive difference in terms of kind of intensity between, say, a road marathon and like a trail 50K. Like, I think they're just, you're not really hammering it, and it's fun, and you do it with other people are really friendly. And I definitely agree.
I think that's where I'm going wrong. Every time I've been running before, I'm just running around a park in London. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm not seeing anything nice and lovely. I'm not taking my time with it. It feels.
But think about when
you're
round
in a circle like a hamster.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of people, because people use treadmills. Your treadmill was invented as a torture device. It's not actually a fun experience. Actually, going out and running in nature, think about a hike that you might do, and then think about going twice as far.
Yeah.
Because you get to see twice as much.
I would
you're
love
just
that.
Going a bit faster.
Yeah.
And I think, like, as well, when you like, because I think when I'd like doing just like, run, like I lived in London, lived in cities a lot, you'd be halfway and you'd be like, oh, I could just get on the tube. I don't have to do the whole run. Whereas something I love when you're like in the mountains or out on a trail is you kind of just have to get on with it, because you're like, there's only one way out of here and it's running. Yeah. And I think I find that, like, mentally, you almost get rid of that, shall I stop? I could stop. And you're just like, well, I better get on with it.
Yeah,
and I think if we're trying to talk to this audience, which is the people that come to the Outdoor Expo, I think the one thing I would say is don't be scared of running. Like, it's actually quite accessible. It's just moving your feet. You're just moving a bit faster than when you're walking. So hopefully that's what this episode will be all about. So hopefully you'll hear some inspirational stories, and we'll talk to you about some cool places where you can go out and you can get involved in do running and maybe give it a try. Yeah. So before we move on to the main interview, just big thank you to Yonder for supporting us and giving away the Ultimate Swim Bundle. You know the drill by now. Just check out the notes in the show notes, and that will tell you how to enter the competition. On to the next interview with Sean Conway.
Running an Ironman based on the flip of a coin might seem crazy, but after listening to this interview with Sean Conway, you'll find out that it's really not.
Welcome back to my favourite part in the show, where I get to interview some incredible guests, and I'm welcoming Sean Conway into the pod today.
I love it.
How's it going?
Thanks for having me. It's amazing. Yeah, such a good show.
Yeah. Have you been out in the expo?
I've been out and about. I brought my two young boys and my wife with me, so they're running riot. Nearly got them in the ice bath. We have it at home, and they've been in at home, and I was like, come on, and they chickened out at the end.
So fair enough.
I'll have to have a word with
them
later.
Did you have a go?
No, it's not cold enough. Five's
not
just
epic enough.
I don't touch ice bath unless it's 2 degrees.
Honestly, I have no idea how to start with all of the stuff that you've been up to. It is so inspirational. How do you get by? How do you sleep? When do you have time?
Well, yeah.
You're so busy.
Yeah, I have to be busy for one.
Yeah.
In my character.
Yeah.
Where do I have the time? I'm not sure I do have the time, to be honest. I get up at 5 every morning.
Yeah.
And 5 till 7 in the morning is my time.
Okay.
And I love it.
Yeah.
And I get up and I'll do some exercises, sort of like weights work or Joe Wicks or something, or Pilates or yoga. For about half an hour, and then I'll go and train either running or biking at the moment.
Amazing.
For just over an hour. 7 o'clock, then it's sort of doing the school run and all that sort of dad fun stuff, which I love. But that morning session is, like, if I don't get up at 5 and get that out of the way, I feel like I'm on the back foot all day, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously this session is about running, so I would love to discuss the 105 Ironmans in a row every single day that you did. I've been trying to get my head around that. So if you could just like explain to me how it worked, what it was like, start from the
what
top.
It was like, miserable. Yeah. Don't do it, everyone. Don't try. No, I'd love for someone to try it, actually. So an Ironman is a 2.4-mile swim, 112 miles on the bike, and then a marathon. And this record, you've got a calendar day to do it, and you got 17 hours from when you start the swim. So there's sort of two rules. There's no averaging allowed. There's no rest days and making up the lost mileage on a following day. You know, if you're a mile short on the run and you go over the 17 hour, it's game over.
That's it. Yeah, really?
Yeah, record's over. So there's no averaging. Whereas a lot on the other stuff I've done, like my Across Europe cycling record, know, I could have had a rest day if I wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, the records are so hard now, it wouldn't allow for a rest day. But if I'd had a really bad day, I could at least make up for it on a good day. Whereas this one, when I had bad weather or mechanicals or an injury and I was 3 hours slower,
there's nothing.
I still had to push it to get that 10 p.m. cut off because I was starting at 5 a.m. every day. So, that was just relentless. Every single day, there was no off button, you know.
How was that? Like, how did you get into the mental state to be able to push yourself to that point every single day for 105 days?
So you've got to manifest, well, I manifested this idea that it was a done deal. I just had to turn up.
Yeah.
So, and when you sort of make it a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
And there's no plan B, you know, there was no get out of jail.
Yeah.
You, all that sort of thing.
Wow.
Especially the sort of the no plan B, mm-hmm. you know, and then the non-negotiables. Everything I did, my alarm went up at 4:29 every day.
Yeah.
And genuinely, in 105 days, I did not question that alarm. Not once. I slept through it a few times. I was so knackered. I had to get woke. Literally, my crew had to come and wake me up because they heard the alarm going for like a minute. But honestly, not once in 105 days did I wake up and go,
I don't know if I'm going to do this.
I don't think I'm going to do this today.
Yeah.
No, I was like, it's a non-negotiable.
You can't even let yourself go there. Can't even let your mind go
but
there.
But I put it in the same category as brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
Or putting on clothes. Like, you don't. No, none of us wake up in the morning and go, oh, I wonder if I'm going to walk around naked today or not. You don't do it, do you? You like, you just put, like, it's a non-negotiable. You put on clothes when you leave the house. Yeah, you don't even think about it. And I genuinely had the same feeling
mindset
towards it. Like, my 4:29 alarm went off and I was like, now I go to work. I have to go to work because it's my job.
What were the weather conditions then?
Oh, miserable. North Wales.
Yeah,
you can imagine. That first week, I delayed the start by a week because of snow.
Seriously?
Yeah, and then I'm on these small back farm lanes with cow crap everywhere and dead badgers and, you know, slippery roads because of it's been winter and it's especially through the shady trees on corners. You've got leaves that are still stuck on the road from the autumn and... Yeah, so it was, was pretty miserable.
Yeah, ups and downs. Week.
And then it got really hot. Like May and June were like boiling hot.
What months did you do it in?
April, May, June, July.
Gosh, that's such a long time.
I know. That's weirdly, when I started, someone said, you're going to be doing this 105 days. Didn't scare me.
Yeah.
People said, you're going to be doing this for 3.5 months. Didn't scare me. People said, you're going to do this 14 weeks. Didn't scare me. When people said, on the 10th of April when I started, people said, you know you're going to be doing this until like the 20th of July. I was like, oh, wow. It's, most of April, all of May, all of June, and most of July. I was like, wow, that feels like a long way away.
Incredible. How did you feel after it?
Relieved.
Must have been euphoric.
Yeah, relieved and secretly kind of sad.
Yeah.
Because I was doing, and this is what I try and explain to people, because it's hard for me to... You know, people say, Sean, why were you sad to stop? It's the most miserable. You know, some people say it's one of the hardest endurance challenges on the planet because there's no averaging. You've got to do it every single day. And you're if you get injured, you're out. If you, if you don't miss the cutoffs, you're out. You know, you've got to be really on top of your game. And I sort of agree with him, I think. So I sort of think of it as I was the only person on the whole planet, 8 billion people or whatever, doing a specific job. So it's a job that no one else on the planet had. And yes, it was difficult. And yes, it was miserable. And it was painful, like extreme pain, especially on the run. But my sort of colleagues, my work colleagues, which was the online virtual community and the people who came and joined me on the run and the swim and the bike, they were amazing. The support network was amazing. And would you hand in your resignation to that job? You know, I just didn't want to do it.
Yeah,
because it meant I'd be giving up
so much.
This one thing that no one else on the planet gets to do. I'm the only one who gets to do it. I have since been told by many, many people it's a job no one else wants. So
that's true.
Give it up, Sean. No one else is going to have it. So there was a bit of bittersweet at the end, but it was time. The record was 102. The record was 101. I broke it at 102. Went on to 105 by flipping a coin.
By flipping a coin?
Well, because then if the coin says no... Then it's the coin, not me. It's not me giving up. It's the coin.
fair enough. That's a nice way to hands.
I needed to be a dad again. My kids, especially the last 2 or 3 weeks, every day I finished because I was starting to get quite quick towards the end. Actually, from day 30 on, I was seeing the kids at night because they hadn't gone to bed yet. And, you know, I'd get home and it'd be about 15, 20 minutes when they're awake. And yeah, those last 3 weeks, they were like, "Daddy, Daddy, are you finished your challenge so you can play with me?" You know, yeah. And I was like, "Oh, you know." So it was time. Like, yeah. 105. I'm happy with 105. And also, I'm not in the business to try and like make the record massively unachievable for someone else.
Yeah.
I'd much rather someone go and break my record next year, having been inspired by what I do, than hold the record for another 50 years.
In this section with Sealskins, Mike effectively bullies me to dump my phone in water. It makes sense, I promise.
Hi guys, and welcome to the kit section of the National Outdoor Pod Show. I'm here today with Sky from Sealskins. Sky, we're going to talk about running and some of the stuff that Sealskins do in the running market. So firstly, tell us who Sealskins are.
Lovely. Firstly, I've been on the stand all day today and yesterday. I'm exhausted. I'm so thankful I get to sit down for a bit.
For people who don't know, we're at the National Outdoor Expo right now, and it's pretty busy out there. So Sky's been dragged off the stand to do this. So we're expecting some real highlights and nuggets of information from you.
Well, I mean, this is why we exist. We are there to enable people to get outdoors, which is just the entire ethos. So should I start with what Sealskins is?
Who yes,
we
please.
Are? Yeah. So we exist to solve a problem that's keeping people dry.
Yep.
So we have almost 30 years old. We started by just making waterproof membranes, and we did amazing waterproof socks and gloves. Now, recently, we have ventured out, and we're doing different products. We're doing caps, we're doing beanies, we're doing gloves, all waterproof, all with the same waterproof membrane. Now, in terms of running, it's super important to stay dry. Now, we do have a secret running collection dropping soon.
A secret running collection?
This could be an exclusive
drop.
It's
not secret anymore, mate.
Exclusive. Okay. We'll keep it between us. That is launching very soon. It's something that we've been working on for a while. We're super excited about it. But in terms of keeping you dry, our waterproof membrane is fantastic for hiking, for running, anything that you need to protect you when you're outdoors.
Okay, so tell me about this secret running kit. What have you got?
So what we've got at the moment is a waterproof running cap.
Can I take a look?
Now, this one is super unique because give that a fold, and then you can fold it again, and you can pop that in your pocket.
Oh, wow.
It's 100%.
So for
waterproof.
Our audio listeners that you can't do, this folds up to about the size of a hand and it folds really easily, but actually when it pops out, it still maintains its integrity because it's got a fold in the
It's got a fold in the peak, in the brim, and it's 100% waterproof as well. So nice. Getting that technology with the foldable cap is really unique to us. It's really quite special.
Very cool.
And I mean, it looks amazing. We've got brand new colours. We've got some brand new blue, red and yellow ones that we've just dropped for springtime.
Why is a waterproof cap important?
So waterproof cap is important because you need to keep your head dry.
Yes, it is. but you lose the majority of your heat through your head, right?
So. Exactly. It's all connected. But you do need to be breathable. It can't be a waterproof hat that is like a plastic bag in your head.
Yeah.
So the waterproof membrane that we've got and has been used for almost 30 years, that has tiny perforations in the membrane which allow for breathability, and it keeps your head dry. So
perspiration can get out, but rain can't get
in. Perspiration can escape, but water cannot penetrate.
Nice.
So it's a really special membrane. It's really quite amazing.
That's really clever. Okay, I like that. This is a cool piece of kit. Have a look at this. What else you got to show?
I've got some socks as well, Mike.
I'm going to file this.
So I'll hand you one. Hold the other, so I know what I'm talking about. But this uses the same membrane as the cap. So
now
again,
this is really interesting. So this will stay dry if I hike through puddles or run through puddles.
Honestly, it's so weird. We've got a demo bucket, like a waterproof bucket thing that we're using to show people just how waterproof it is. And I've been putting my phone in the socks and dunking it, submerging it in the water, and it stays dry. It's really weird because once you've got it on your foot and it feels like a normal sock, and you go through puddle and you have that instinct or that shock where you're like, oh no, my foot's going to get wet. But it just stays dry and it feels like a normal sock.
This is an absolute game changer.
It's amazing, honestly. and it just feels like a normal sock.
Okay, it's what we're really going to do, special. We're going to cut away now to Dom, who's the producer of the show, putting his phone inside this sock and then putting it in a bucket. So we'll cut back in a second. Okay, guys, I am here at the National Outdoor Expo. We're at the Sealskin stand and we're about to put Dom's phone in a bucket of water. Here we go.
Sorry, I'm not prepared.
Oh, they got the wrong sock.
I've got my hand.
Okay, I'm not sure that's the waterproof one, right? Yeah,
Dom, how are you feeling about this?
Very nervous.
You trust the technology?
Is it Dom's phone?
Yep. Oh, no, it's the wrong one. Right, so should we have a look?
That is
wet. That is probably
wet.
I'm a little bit worried, Dom.
And my phone's actually in there. Okay.
It's dry as a bone. Yeah, actually, it's dry as a bone. Fair play. That is a good product.
True. It works.
Right, sorry, Dom. How long can you wear these for? What sort of sizes do you do? Is there anything else in here that's technical, that's supportive?
So it stays waterproof forever. You could have your feet in a puddle forever. I don't know when that would ever happen, but you can. It's moisture wicking. It's got those breathable properties.
So moisture wicking, for people who don't know, is?
It doesn't allow for moisture to sit on your foot. So because it's breathable, it just pulls that away for you.
So again, similar principle to the cap. So the perspiration is taken away, but the water can't get in.
Exactly. It's all about keeping it moving, keeping it fresh.
But for people who do, so I do a lot of long distance trail running and things like that. So often I'll come through puddles and that just ruins your day. So I always carry spare pairs of socks to change into. But something like this, for me, I mean, I would love this product. I may actually buy some.
We've got loads of variations. So if you need something that's a little bit more heavy duty, whether that's longer, mm-hmm. or we use this technology called HydroStop. Now, that's a little silicone band on the inside of the sock that prevents the water spilling in, and it'll just keep it in place as well. So we've got socks for everything. And then we've got that new secret.
Okay, so what's the secret bit? Tell us now, tell us.
I can't. I've been told I cannot say anything else.
But you've already said it. Okay, so when do we find out about the secret stuff?
Very soon. You'll just have to follow us and follow the journey.
Okay, so if you'd like to find out more about waterproof socks, which are amazing, the awesome fold-up hat, which I've very delicately filed over there, and Dom putting his phone in a bucket, then check out Sealskin. So how do they follow you? What's the website? What's the Instagram?
Sealskins.com. Sealskins on Instagram.
And how do you spell Sealskins? Is with a Z.
Sealskins with a Z. Sorry, that's a very important bit of info.
Awesome. Okay, so if you'd like to follow them, sealskins.com, Sealskins with a Z. Thank you for watching this section of the tech segment. I've been Mike.
Now it's time for the penultimate tech section of the National Outdoor Pod Show as we head onto the show floor with Zaleo.
Hi guys, it's Mike here and I'm filming the tech section of the Pod Show and I'm here with John from Zaleo to talk about their product. So John, tell us all about it.
Well, it's a two-way satellite communicator from Zaleo. It's actually a hybrid device, so you can send and receive messages via the satellite. But if you do have a mobile phone signal, we use your mobile phone signal to do it.
So this will work anywhere without a mobile phone signal, but it can use your mobile phone.
Exactly right. So anywhere in the world, it's literally a puck, tethers with your mobile phone.
Okay.
If your mobile phone still goes, it goes flat, you've still got an SOS button, you can use it in an emergency.
Okay.
And you can also do check-ins. But the key thing really attaches to your rucksack, put in the top of your rucksack, and then you have an app, a bit like WhatsApp on your mobile phone. And when you're off-grid, you can send and receive messages. It shares your location as well with the person who's receiving that message.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the other key thing, it does live tracking. So again, if you want to, every 12 and a half minutes, it will show people where you are. That can either be a public page,
yep.
or it can be within the app to the person that you want to.
So this is phenomenal. So for somebody like me who does distance running and you're trying to keep in contact with your crew, if you're in remote areas, you can message them at any time throughout the journey.
100%, and the message goes through instantaneously. So
fantastic.
If you've got no mobile phone signal, you want to message your crew, and you might not have it for another, they will get it instantaneously. It comes from a normal telephone number, so to them it just arrives as a text message, so they don't have to download the app.
Do they need a different phone, or they just need a phone signal?
Brilliant. Or you could do Zaleo to Zaleo, you both have Zaleos.
That's and how much do these retail for?
They're normally £200, at the show they're £150, and then you have like a mobile phone contract that works alongside them, which is about £18 a month for that contract. Lovely thing about Zaleo though is you can put that on hold for a number of months, so if you're not going to use it for 10 months,
brilliant.
You can just pay £3.50 a month, that holds your mobile number, holds all your data, and then you literally go back into the app, reactivate it, and you're ready to go.
What a fantastic big kit. This is one of the cleverest pieces of kit I've seen at the show. It's really exciting. Anyone ultra running,
long distance hiking or doing any mountain adventures. It feels like a really good bit of kit for you. Thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
We're heading back to Tanuki and Sean Conway now for the second part of his amazing interview, where it features a little bit of chat about a tunnel.
Do you know if there are people giving it a go? Or
yes. Yeah. I have some. Me and a German guy called Jonas Deichmann.
Oh, is it?
We have history.
Okay.
Because I broke his European cycling record.
Okay.
And now he's going to break my Ironman record.
When's he doing that?
Starts in May sometime, I think. Yeah. No, it's awesome. You know what? If I hadn't thought about it, but when he announced it, if someone sort of said, right, choose one person on the planet to break your record, I would have probably chosen him anyway.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm super happy it's him. Yeah, he's a good guy.
Healthy competition.
Yeah, he's an awesome guy. Like, we did an Instagram live together of him quizzing me. I've given him all the tips of what I did wrong.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's strong. Like, he's cycled around the world nearly. He cycled from Nordkap to Cape Town. He cycled the Americas. He's cycled across America and then run back across America. So he's done the double. So he's super strong.
Yeah.
So he'll be, he's definitely the person on the planet to
give that one a go. We'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What would you say was the hardest bit of it then? I remember you saying about the pain when you were doing the running.
Second half of the run was really excruciating. And I didn't want to take pain meds because it would, like, paracetamol or anything. Mm-hmm. Or definitely nothing stronger than that. But even paracetamol would, if it took some of the pain away, my technique would change. And I've learned this over the years, that if I can't feel my legs because the paracetamol's worked, then I just have a terrible technique and I get really bruised feet because I'm just like stomping and running too hard. So for that reason, it was just really painful. You know, everyone was like, doctors and everyone was like, oh, just take some pain meds. And I was like, I know it's not good in the long run for my technique. And then I'll wake up the next day with sore feet, and then the technique goes again, and then your knee goes, and then it's a proper injury.
Then it's all downward.
Yeah, so I wanted to feel everything so that I could really keep on top of my technique so I wouldn't get injured, really.
Incredible.
Yeah.
How do you get past the pain mentally? Like, what place do you go to in your mind to push through that?
I'm micromanaging the reason why the pain's there, and can I fix it? So if it's a knee pain, through experience, I know that it's my hip a little bit and my lower back. So I need to get in there with the massage gun or tennis ball, just my thumb as I'm running. Mm. Really working on my technique, working on my cadence, working on moving my arms. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing to go when I'm tired, is I don't move my arms. Then I don't move my hips. And the hips is what you need, that spring.
Yeah.
You know, because trying to keep, like, if you ask most people to skip 10 times, they could do it. But if you tell someone to do 10 squats, it's much harder, because squats is using soft tissue, skipping is using your fascia and your bouncy ligaments. So trying to remember that, just
same
keep,
with the running. Yeah,
yeah. Same, mainly, yeah, with the running, like pump the arms, move your, you know, your waist. If you ask Kenyans where their waist is, they'll point at their rib cage.
Okay.
And that's where they move, like, that's really high up, and then that inertia keeps them going forward and that sort of thing. I have a pretty sweet technique anyway. Like, I've been tested.
Imagine.
Like, Shane Benzie is one of the best run technique coaches in the world. He did one-on-one stuff with me, and he said my biggest issue is I break with my right leg 30% more than my left. So that, he thinks, is why I have right leg issues with running, because I'm breaking a little bit too much. I should be driving that one back. So other than that, I don't heel strike, I don't toe strike. I've got a good stride length. I've got good cadence mostly.
Yeah.
So my run, I'm pretty happy with my run. But it was just coming off the bike, a few people who've sort of joined me and or done sort of, you know, these Ironman events.
Yeah.
They reckon that the swim and the bike equates to a marathon. So when you start your marathon on an Ironman, it's as if you've done a marathon already.
Already.
Yeah. And I can sort of believe it, although I still think, but then I ran 100K. The other week, 106K, and I felt 100 times better at the end of that than I did on every day of the Ironmans.
Really?
Yeah, and that was, you know, pushing 2.5 marathons. So I can believe it. So, you know, going into that marathon every day, it was genuinely as if I was a marathon down already. So by the time I was hitting what would have been my 13 mile, that last 13 mile is probably the same at as being at like mile 40 on an ultra, you know. So it was hard. And then and the accumulation of that
over 105 days.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, most people are all right with just hanging out in their comfort zone. You know, like most people are just happy with being in their comfort zone and not pushing it.
You say that, and it's a popular, and it's a sort of a attention-grabbing headline, I think.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think the majority of people are.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of people who like pushing themselves now.
There
which is
a,
why they come to the
which
show.
Which is why and, with stuff and like this, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think more than ever, that's why marathon places are up in the world. That's
so
why Ironman places are up. That's why triathlon's getting big. That's why ultras. You know, most ultras now... If unless you sign up within a week, they're sold out. Like a lot of them are. So unless, you know, you get these small obscure ones and stuff, of course. But, you know, I signed up to the tunnel race, which is a 200-mile run in a one-mile tunnel. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That gets sold out in minutes.
Whoa.
Minutes.
What tunnel?
Bath-Bristol on the old railway track between Bath and Bristol, yeah. I was meant to do it this year, but both my boys got scarlet fever. Which I thought died out 200 years ago. Apparently not. And I think I had it as well, which is a shame. So I couldn't do it. And I only got in because I was on the waiting list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
50 people signed up. 40 people turned up. Only 6 finished.
Wow.
It's hard. Yeah, 200 miles in a 1 mile tunnel.
Is it really dark?
So they have these real low-level lights. Yeah. And they turn the lights off at night. Yeah, you're not allowed headphones as well. Part of the rules.
Gosh, yeah, super zoning out.
Oh, I loved it.
Mind over
matter. I would have loved it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah.
Who push it, which is great.
What do you get out of it, out of pushing your comfort zone?
I get something to chase.
Yeah.
I just have to chase things in life.
Yeah.
And that feeds the terrier in me, and which is annoying. I keep joking. Like, I wish the terrier got satisfied with pottery or something like that. It would be much easier on
my
body.
No, I could
body.
Imagine you would have just a house full of pottery.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I do take it to the extreme, I guess. No, I like chasing things.
Yeah.
I love training. You know, write me a training plan. My coach, when he wrote me the training plan for the Ironmans, he said, by a long way, you're the person who's followed a training plan the best
yeah,
out of anyone he's ever trained in his whole life.
Wow.
If I on Training Peaks, you get green is if you do the training plan perfectly, you know, red is if you miss it, and orange is if you do the training plan but either do it too short or too long.
Okay.
And literally I was green
the
pie chart every week.
Yeah,
I love it. I love training. So you know, all aspects of chasing these big goals I like. You know, I like being fit. I like spending more time outside.
Yeah.
I like eating healthier.
Have you always been this way? Because I remember reading that you used to be a photographer and then you moved over to all of this endurance.
No, exactly. I think I had it in me.
Yeah.
I just didn't find an avenue to express that side of me.
Yeah.
Until I was in my 30s.
Yeah. So. Is it one of the best switches you've
ever absolutely,
made?
Yeah.
Yeah
no, amazing. The terrier, because the other side of the terrier is I'm a monkey and I get frustrated if I don't have something to chase.
Yeah.
And I think in my 20s, I didn't have anything proper to chase that scratched that terrier's itch, and I got frustrated and depressed and miserable, and I hated, I just didn't know what I was doing. I was lost.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden having these big pointless world records to break.
Yeah, was perfect
direction. Is what the terrier needs. And... You know, I wish it was something more noble and profound, but, you know, I'll just go and run a long way. And
it's pretty
cycle
noble
long way.
And profound, to be
I don't
honest
know about
with
that.
You. What's next? What's next?
I really want to get good at these shorter things like 100 milers.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and one day events.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not there yet. I've still got injuries from the Ironmans, but I'd like to be able to go and run 100 miles without having to think about it.
Okay.
That's my goal for the next, maybe by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm half that now.
Well, I've got full confidence in you. If I
have
confidence in anyone could do it, it's definitely going to be you.
I think so, I can do 50 mile without thinking. Like, if you said go and run 50 mile tomorrow or right from here, I could really much do it without having to think about it. And it'd be nice if that was 100. So that's my next goal.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck with everything. And this has been such an inspirational conversation. I was really excited about meeting you and just talking through everything that you do. So thank you for spending the time with me.
Thanks for having me.
Yet another thing that Mike signs us up for in this series is we chat to Steve from Run to Paris.
Hi everybody, I'm here today with Steve, who's one of the directors of Run to Paris, which is a really innovative new race format, so we're going to learn a little bit about that now. So Steve, welcome aboard, nice to see you.
No, thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, so firstly, Run to Paris, tell us about it. I think I can guess where you go.
Yes.
But where do you start and what's the stage length, how many people do you have?
So the idea behind it is that people have been cycling London to Paris for years. It's one of those bucket list cycle events that people do and cross off. But it's time runners have a go. And the thing is that a lot of running events are going longer, harder, further, faster, which is amazing. The people that can do those things are incredible. But this is a race or a run designed for ordinary runners.
Okay.
It's a team relay. So you and your best mates all get together. You each run one leg a day. And in 4 days, we go from London and we finish at the Eiffel Tower in Paris.
So talk me through them. So there's five team members.
Five people in a team.
And you each do one leg a day.
Exactly.
And what distance are the legs?
So they're variable legs. So you can sit down and work out who's the stronger runner, who wants to do the hillier section, those sorts of things. But it averages out about a half marathon per person per day.
Nice.
So achievable. But after 3 or 4 days, you really do start to feel it. So it's still a big physical challenge.
And the, your friends, when they're following, like, how does that work? How do you get connected? How do you find the route?
Yes, so each runner has the GPS files, and we also use a brilliant app called Rungo, which is essentially a sat-nav for runners. The checkpoints are all marked out. So let's say we're a team.
Yeah.
I'm runner number one. We're all at...
So you're doing like 25 miles and I'm doing one. We've split the distance based on ability.
They tend to be a little more even than that. But yes, I've got an 8 mile first leg that I'm running. I'll head off from Wimbledon out through the suburbs and through the parks. Quite an urban leg. You'll jump in the team car.
Yeah.
You'll drive to checkpoint one. It'll take me 2 hours to run 8 miles.
Yeah.
Find a nice little cafe. Go for breakfast, get some supplies.
Now you're talking.
Turn up at the checkpoint. I'll jump in the car, you jump out the car, you're on leg two. And we just bunny hop all the way to New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
We catch the overnight ferry. And then we spend 3 days bunny hopping across France. And then we all run together for the final mile up to the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, I love that. And the terrain, is it road, is it trail, is it mixed?
So this is the brilliant thing about the event. It's so mixed. You have urban running, you have hill running, you have forests, you have trails. Every single day is different. I mean, some of the scenery on day three as we're going through the French countryside is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, it's chateaus, it's sunflowers.
A little bit of wine amazing. On the way.
Well, this is the whole thing. It's you and your mates on a road trip with a bit of running, quite a bit of running thrown in. So it's that adventure. And each night the base camp is built. So you've got a big base camp all built for you. Your tents are built for you. Breakfast and dinner provided. Some amazing locations, some amazing local food. So yeah, it's a real adventure.
So I've done races like this before, and actually the camaraderie you get from those five people in a van, and it's actually quite stressful driving the van because you don't want to miss the checkpoint right, and then your mates get in and out, and it's really fun because it's like lots of mini races.
Yes, it's brilliant. And the whole psychology behind it is different. You're not running to get to the finish line, you're running to meet your mate.
Yeah.
And it's that side of all coming together as a team. And actually what we've found as well in previous editions, which has just been brilliant, is that the first day, you know, it's all about the team.
Yeah.
But then you start falling into step with the other runners and the other teams.
Yeah.
And then you start running in twos and threes. And actually by the final day in Paris, you know, and we're all having that party right near the finish line, everyone knows each other. Everyone's chatting about my leg was the hardest. I did that toughest thing.
And I bet the party at the end is pretty...
Oh, it's a lot.
Well, actually, probably everybody gets so overexcited, thinks they're going to have a really good time, and then they all fall asleep after half an hour, right?
There's a big peak, there's a big celebration. I mean, the finish line is just one of the most iconic places. That idea of the whole team of five getting together and running that last mile right up to the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
It's just a really iconic, brilliant finish to an event. You're not going to get a better finish than that.
Sounds very cool. So what does it cost to enter? How do I enter? And when is it?
Yeah, so... this year we've got two editions. Yep. There's an event at the end of May, which is now sold out.
Mm-hmm.
So we're limited to 50 teams per event. And we've still got our September event open, which is the 12th to 15th of September.
Nice.
If you just Google Run to Paris or go on runtoparis.com, all of the information's on there. You can sign up. It's £1,200 for a team of five at the moment, which is an early bird discount until the end of April. So that works out at, you know, £250 per person for 4 days, including your travel and your food and your accommodation.
It's pretty reasonable, yeah. Considering, yeah, everything that's involved in it. So I think we should try and get Dom, who's hiding behind the camera, to set up a pod show team so that we can go and do this. I mean, let's put him under pressure, guys. Put your comments in here if you'd like to see Dom, me and a few others run to Paris. Well, let's see what happens. Look, this in all seriousness, this sounds like a fantastic event and actually something that I would really love to do. So hopefully we've inspired some of you to give this a go. What's the website for them to check out?
Runtoparis.com.
Easy. Great. Thank you so much for coming on. And thanks, guys. On to the next section.
Finally, if you're struggling with your feet during running and maybe you're thinking about some insoles, then Healthy Steps advice may just help you.
Hello and welcome to this next segment of the pod show. In this running episode, and now we're talking all about advice, I'm joined by Andy from Healthy Step. Andy, hello, thank you for joining me. Do you mind just running me through who you are and what Healthy Step are all about?
Hello, yes. So by background, I'm a musculoskeletal podiatrist, but I've spent quite a few years in research and development. I'm author and a lecturer in clinical biomechanics. So at Healthy Step, I'm the design consultant. So they'll sit down with me and decide what kind of product we're looking at to enter the market. And we try and come together to work on producing the most effective product for that particular task that we can. So Healthy Step is a design company primarily, but we do also do some direct retail sales as well, although we primarily supply the clinical professions right across the world, in fact.
I might be asking an obvious question, but do runners often find issues with their feet? I think we hear a lot about hips and knees and shins as well. But feet, they're taking, especially for the more experienced runner, taking a considerable amount of kind of heat through the running process. So what sort of injuries do people often see connected to their feet?
Well, certainly knees are the number one. The big difference between walking and running is how we use the knees for shock absorption. Or shock attenuation, as we tend to refer to it. The knees pick up a greater burden in running than they do in walking. But in that task, they're also assisted by the hips and the ankles and also the feet. So when you start looking at ankles and feet as part of running injuries, then they are second following knees.
Okay, I want to specifically draw in on insoles, because insoles were previously something that I had connected with being young and maybe not having the right sort of whether I was walking or kind of discomfort in like I said, feet and knees. But it's something that can actually help runners. So can you just very top line run me through what insoles actually are?
Yeah, well, insole is a very loose term. Generally, in medical circles, the type of insole that runners are using is something called a functional foot orthosis. And that basically means something that is designed to change the function of the foot and the ankle. The orthosis bit actually refers to straightening up, but not always is that the right thing to do. Having things perfectly straight is not necessarily a good thing. For example, in running compared to walking, we swing the hip much more underneath the body. And that is because when we walk, we have 1 foot on the ground or 2 feet on the ground. The difference between walking and running is in running, you have 1 foot on the ground or no feet on the ground. That is the distinction. So to support your body weight, you have to swing your leg more underneath your body at the hip. And that means the foot tends to strike more on the outside edge and wants to roll in further and faster than it does when it's walking. Now, the body should be able to cope with that, but not in all cases can it, particularly when you first take up running and start increasing your distance in running. So certain tissues will then be sort of the bearers of the greater burden of that change in the foot posture.
And it seems like lots of people have varying different kind of foot compositions with bigger arch, you know, a higher arch or a flatter arch. Is that something that might impact their running as well?
Yeah, the vault of the foot, I'd rather call it a vault than an arch because okay. It is very much a three-dimensional structure, but I do appreciate that everybody knows it's the arch.
That's the first piece of advice, vault.
Yeah, it's a very complex structure and it's used basically to enhance the ability for the foot to act like a spring, a very sort of elastic spring for both shock absorption and for elastic recoil to help accelerate off the foot. So the arch profile itself is not the one and only part of how we do that. Muscle activity is also very important. The strength of our ligaments in our feet are also a very important part of this. But by having a structure that you can change the span distance and contouring across, can change how easy it is for you to stiffen your foot. So if you think of an arch in a building, the higher the arch and the shorter the span between the supports, the more it's firmly it's held together. And you'll see that at bridges all the time. You know, the longer the span, the more support you require. So it's those principles. By having a very high arch foot, you tend to be less good at shock absorbing because the foot will act in a stiffer manner. However, if you've got a low arch foot, sometimes it's a little bit overly flexible as a consequence of that. And therefore you'll need to work your muscles harder to try and stiffen the foot for acceleration. So high arch feet are not so good at shock absorbing, and low arch feet are not so good for accelerating power to push against the ground.
Is there a way?
Most of us have something in the middle.
Okay.
But they're constantly changing as we move. They're not set in stone, that shape. So your foot, once you hit the ground, should flatten down. And by flattening down, that acts as a shock absorber, but it also increases the contact surface area with the ground. So that reduces the peak amount of pressure. Remember, force over area is pressure. Okay, so if you can flatten your foot, you will spread the pressures on your foot. So you don't want your foot to remain absolutely rigid and high arched. So it's doing lots of different things. Is there one type of foot that doesn't get injured? No, they all get injured.
Even still my next question.
Yeah, they all have their risks, and we're all subjected. The biggest risk probably in running is fatigue. So all feet are subject to fatigue risk when you run, but some feet are a little bit harder to manage than others, which is why most people have a sort of vault profile somewhere in the middle, because it makes it a little bit easier to stiffen the foot and also to provide flexibility. Whereas if you're one extreme or the other, you tend to have a more stiff foot or a more flexible foot.
So if people are having issues with this and they already know that they have a certain kind of style of type of foot, whether it's one way or the other, do insoles or maybe even shoes themselves, are they kind of made to bring a more neutral element, you know, to kind of, if someone's got a real high vault, then the insoles will kind of help to neutralize that. Is that kind of the way that it works in a very simple term?
There's a little bit of cheat. So if somebody's got a very high arch foot, then generally you're trying to assist the ability to shock absorb.
Okay, right.
Okay, so you'll go for insoles that provide more cushioning. They also tend to benefit a little bit from having a heel lift in as well. Part of the mechanism by which we shock absorb through the foot is for the ankle joint to dorsiflex, okay, to bend forward. It's actually an extension, although we call it dorsiflexion, and plantar flexion is the flexion. Dorsiflexion is actually the extension, even though it brings the foot closer to the front of the shin. But that motion dissipates a lot of impact energy. And with these very high arch feet, sometimes it's very difficult to get the right range of motion through your ankle joint. So by lifting up the heel, you can get an effectively a little bit more shock absorption back through the ankle. With a flat foot, yes, trying to get a little bit more of the arch back is what you're aiming to do there. So you're trying to prevent the foot from flattening too excessively, particularly when the foot gets fatigued.
Is there, what are they made of? Because I imagine it, like, to aid that shock absorbent side of things, is it like a gel or is it a different type of material?
Yeah, well, when you're considering any insole, you sort of want to approach it in one of three ways. The shape of the insole is important for your problem. So is the material that it's made from, and also the shoe you're going to put it inside. Mm. These are three very, very important factors that work together. So yes, if you've got restriction of motion around your ankle joint, or you've got problems with your Achilles tendon, you use your Achilles tendon to power forward, then having an insole with a heel lift is advantageous. If you've got problems with being able to shock absorb, then you're going to be looking at closed cell foams of one sort or another to increase the amount of shock absorption. But if you've got a foot that flattens down a long way, you might see something a little bit more rigid to try and prevent the foot flattening. But for most people, it's combinations of materials that you tend to end up using. There isn't one material that's perfect. Another concept that goes around that is the way that insoles are manufactured. So you'll find some people very keen to use custom insoles that are made from a scan of the foot. Well, the problem there is the foot constantly changes shape during walking and running. So mm-hmm. which is the right shape for your foot to be set at? Because it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
So necessarily a scan of the foot, unless you've got a very awkward shaped foot, it's a good argument of whether that is necessary or not. But picking the right material and the right properties for the insole for your problem is the important thing. So minor problems, you'll get away with quite a lot of different materials, will work perfectly well for you. But for example, if you have got a problem with your Achilles tendon, having an insole without a heel lift would be a strange thing to have. It's not going to be very successful for you.
Well, that's kind of the thing I just wanted to briefly ask about, is that we've spoken about the positive side of things and how it can help, but are there circumstances where it can actually have a negative effect?
Yeah, I mean, if you get the wrong shape insole or the wrong material for the insole for your problem, then yes, it can certainly hinder the situation. And one of the biggest things to consider is that adding an insole inside your shoe does add weight. And the weight of the shoe has some of the biggest effects on your running mechanical efficiency. So if you've got a shoe of 25 grams and you're going to increase that to 35 grams and you've got to take that for 25 miles, it's going to make a difference to how much your muscles have to work. So you've got to always make sure that the weight of the insole it's not a hindrance for the benefits it's giving you for offloading a tissue like your Achilles tendon that's being injured.
Okay, so I'm a runner that's having some issues and I think this might be something that could help me. Where am I going? Kind of what's my first step, no pun intended, to looking into this subject? Where can I go? Do I presume there's a fitting process? And also what sort of price point roughly are we going to be looking at for this?
Okay. There are three kind of very contradictory answers to this. The first thing is, if it's a mild problem, if you're just getting a little bit of irritation under your feet at the end of a long run, or you're increasing your pace and your distance and you're beginning to get a little bit of aching under your feet, then something quite simple will probably do the job. So I would look for something around the sort of 25-35 pound range, and I would be quite happy for you to take that out of the packet and stick it into your running shoes, remove the insock inside your running shoe, replace it with this one, and give that a go. And certainly for most people, that will be very successful, particularly if you combine that with some rehabilitation exercises to your feet. And at Healthy Steps website, we have plenty of advice on what exercises to do for certain problems in the foot. So you'll find quite a bit on the internet about strengthening feet. And that's an important way to go. The second sort of route is to look at your running shoe retailer and have a chat with them. A lot of them will also supply insoles, and if they're experienced enough, they'll be able to give you some good advice on the kind of insoles that might be suitable for you. The old idea that pronation is a bad thing, I'd be very concerned if somebody's trying to sort of say that to you. And the reason why I say that is that pronation means to take up a prone position. That's all it means. And obviously, as bipeds with the bottom of our foot facing the ground, that means our feet are always pronated. Okay, so pronation is not a bad thing. It's an extremely important thing, unless you're walking around on your hands and your feet are stuck up in the air, because that's the only way they can be supinated, which is the other word that's used for feet. So if it's all about, oh, you're pronating too much, I would be just a little bit concerned about the advice you're getting. If you've got something complicated, and you've tried some simple insoles and rehabilitation, you've tried changing your shoes and things like that, the problem is still persisting, that's when you'll probably gain from seeing a clinical expert. And you really need to find somebody who really is experienced in dealing with biomechanics, and particularly running biomechanics. Word of mouth is always going to be the best way forward with that. But you'll find podiatrists, you may find some orthotists as well, physiotherapists sometimes specialize in this area, sometimes even chiropractors and orthotists. But it's finding that specialty, somebody who is dealing a lot with runners and understands that there are many running styles, okay, and each of them have their own idiosyncrasies.
Andy, thank you so much. This has been really interesting for me, and I imagine for a lot of people that are listening to this that may have issues or may know someone that has issues. So I think you've given some fantastic advice and representing Healthy Steps. Yeah, so thank you so much.
No problem. It's one of the reasons why we've got so many different types of insoles. Some of them are condition specific. So if you know what's actually wrong with your foot, so you've got plantar fasciitis or Achilles tendinopathy or problems with tibialis posterior muscle, the insole is designed to deal with those particular problems. And that is the best way of approaching this. But as I say, general little aches and pains, you'll find the more simple contoured insoles are quite adequate for dealing with the problems.
Amazing. I've learned a lot. Andy, thank you so much.
No problem.
And that almost brings us to the end of this episode, all talking about running, but we're going to hand over for a final bit of chat from the hosts.
Hey guys, thanks for sticking with us for episode 5. We've only got one more to go, but before we leave you, we're going to go into the regular feature with Tanuke, which is the Would You Rather. But before we do that, I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, Yonder. You know the drill, Ultimate Swim Bundle, check the show notes, click on the competition, and hopefully you'll win a cool bit of kit. So, Tanuke, yeah. Would you rather? What have we got this week?
So, would you rather spend a week surviving in the Arctic tundra or in the rainforest? Amazon rainforest, to be specific.
I'm going for the Arctic tundra for a couple of two reasons. I feel like everything I've ever read or watched about people being in like the rainforest, it just sounds brutal.
Like, sound brutal.
Bugs and the humidity. And also a massive thing I love about being outside is like I love big open views. So being like that enclosed like rainforest, that just doesn't really appeal to
kind
me.
Claustrophobic.
So I feel like I'm sure the Arctic would be brutal, but I just think it'd be beautiful.
See, I'd love to do both. They both sound amazing. I think if I had to pick, I think I'd probably go for the Amazon just because it feels like there'd be so much going on in there. And actually, I think maybe you get a bit sort of bored of like
the
white and the flat in, you know, if you were stuck out in the Arctic. But I mean, I'd like to do both. I actually really want to run a marathon in the Arctic. I think that would be so
would be amazing.
I've got friends who've sort of are trying to persuade me to do that.
Can we sort that one out, Mike?
Can we do that too?
Sponsor? Next trip, please. Yeah. Another sponsor. What would you do?
I think I'd pick the rainforest as well, just for variety.
Yeah, I think it'd be quite cool. But we'd both probably be dead of spider bites. Unless she'd be eaten by a polar bear, so it'd be
and
great.
And it'd be the cold might get me.
The cold might get you.
So, right, before we finish up, we've talked a lot about running in this episode. You've got a 4-hour run with any person in your life. Who are you picking to come with you? Tanuke.
My dog.
Oh, nice.
Is that lame?
That's a good one. Not too much chat.
No chat. And she also helps me quite a lot, pulls me along quite a fair bit too. So.
Oh, I like that. Elise?
Tactics.
I'm going to have to say Dave, aren't I? He, my dad, he's got an arthritic hip and he can't run at the moment and he's really grumpy about it. So if I don't take him on a fantasy 4-hour run, he's going to be annoyed.
Yeah, and he does come on a lot of runs with you, right? So that's great. Well, awesome. Thank you, guys.
What about you?
Oh, who would I pick? Do you know, I've got loads of really good running friends, and if I pick one of them, they're all going to hate me. But, yeah, I just can't. No, I can't think of anyone.
Stay right here, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a few adventures together, and they've been really good. So, for the avoidance of me getting beaten up by Elise, I'm going to say Elise. So, thank you for sticking with us, guys. Next week's episode is all about hiking. This week's been all about running. Big thank you to Yonder for sponsoring us. Click on the show notes to find out how you can enter the competition and win the Ultimate Swim Bundle. We will see you next week for the last episode. Please come back and join us, and I hope you have fun.
And that brings to the end the penultimate episode of the first series of the National Outdoor Pod Show. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, and leave a review. We'll see you back next week for the final episode with the same amazing host where it'll all be about hiking. We'll see you then.